Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
TV money is TV money, and I've said this so many times. Somehow college athletics officials have sold their fans on rooting for how much revenue they make, not how many games we actually can win.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
We're within weeks, maybe, even some might say days, of some kind of imminent decision here, whether that's Pac-12 stays together or Pac-12 goes under.
And SI's Pat Forte.
I know it's hard. And that's the thing, I think, looking at these four guys that are talking, that you could go 4-for-4, be really good NFL quarterbacks. You could go 0-for-4. Probably going to go somewhere in between.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. And if there was the single most predictable thing to happen in the year of 2023, has now occurred. The single most predictable thing.
What would this be?
Anthony Richardson was going to show up at the NFL draft combine and be crowned as the next, I don't know what, higher upside than Brady and Montana combined. This is not unusual because we've all marveled at all of the physical skills of Anthony Richardson, Florida quarterback, the last few years and wondered, my Lord, if this guy ever gets it together, he's unstoppable, right? And sure enough, 6'4", 244, he measures in at. He sets the all-time combine quarterback broad jump and high jump and vertical leap, not high jump, vertical leap. Clocks in at a 4.43, and then he does his passing drills right behind Ohio State's C.J. Stroud, who's in the running for, you know, the first or second quarterback pick. Looks awful good. Got some velocity deal of like, I think he threw 62 miles an hour or something. So, you know, he's in there with the greatest of all time in that. I mean, Anthony, if the combine was a thing, like maybe that should be the new Olympic decathlon. Should have NFL combine. Anthony Richardson is built for the combine, man. So now everyone in the NFL is like, well, you know, could he go top five? Could he go? No. Bryce Young's only 5'10" and a quarter. All of that. Thoughts on Anthony Richardson this week? It was fun to, if you like watching this stuff, and I'm a glutton for punishment, and I actually occasionally do enjoy watching the combine. I won't watch them all, but it was something else to watch this guy just perform. But can he be an NFL quarterback? Because he certainly was not a great college quarterback. Pat, what do you think?
As you said, he's built for the combine. I will believe it when I see it that he's built for Sundays. I don't know. You're right. That everything that happened at the combine is everything we've all watched and thought, right? Oh, Bryce Young's small. Oh, well, yeah, we knew that. I also saw him, you know, absolutely carve up some incredibly good defenses and make hero play after hero play after hero play. Anthony Richardson was one of those guys everybody was talking about from preseason 2021, and he had 2 years to become something other than just a physical colossus, and he never really did. Doesn't mean he can't. He might just, you know, not be as on as fast a developmental track as Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud. And, yeah, you do love physical gifts, but, man, I would be extremely leery of drafting him high. And same thing with Will Levis. I didn't see enough production in the areas that tend to really, really matter for NFL quarterbacks. So I would say buyer beware.
As much as Dan enjoys the combine, I don't enjoy the combine. I watched very little, but obviously I saw the video. The slow motion video. I love the slow motion video of Anthony Richardson going up for his record vertical jump. I don't know how a vertical jump is going to help him play quarterback, but he definitely is. There was evidence there on the field that Anthony Richardson is what we all thought, and that is an athletic freak, you know. And I think we all know that being a quarterback, right, is more than having athleticism. So I'm kind of with Pat there, right? I'll believe it when I see it, and very much buyer beware. It'll be interesting. Like, where was he projected? I don't even know. Like, where was he projected going into the combine, and how have those projections, have they changed?
So I don't know. I'm not following the mock drafts, and I don't really know. Yeah. I did talk to a number of NFL teams across the last, you know, 6 months about Anthony Richardson, and I believe this is still the case, including a few since the season ended. And the bit was like top 10 or fourth round. Right? Yeah. So, well, and it's like, you know, tell me I'm wrong. I can't. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me I got this wrong. I don't know. I think people thought he'd end up in the first round because the most predictable thing was he was going to go to Indianapolis, and every single, yeah. I mean, these are jaded. These are people who have been watching players work out for 30 years for, and they're all like sitting on the edge of their seat, you know, going, oh yeah. My Lord. Like, yeah. This is Cam Newton type stuff where you're just like, physically, I don't know. The whole thing is the NFL's temptation is look at the physical gifts on this guy. And he's only 20. And is in 2 years, he wasn't surrounded by great talent. He had to switch coaches. I mean, you're right, we can make a million excuses. You say, I'm taking him above Will Levis, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I'm sold on Will Levis, you know, right. And or you're going to look back and go, wait, you didn't take this colossus of an athlete with unbelievable potential. You took the 5'10 guy and who isn't, you know, and you know, so that's the thing. The problem is, the 5'10 guy is really good at actual football.
Yes, right.
Like, he's unbelievable.
Beating teams on the field and making plays that beat teams on the field.
Yeah. Forget the great at the combine. How about great at the football?
Yeah.
But you sit there and go, I got to take a guy this size for 17 games. Like, he's not going to make it. And, you know, this is the terrifying part. But so I think he has raised his draft status because I think there's a bit of like, this is a great athlete. And then you're looking and going, what if I'm designing plays where I have a 244 pounder running a 4.3 and he can vertical leap over 10 feet or something like that or whatever. I mean, not 10 feet, but broad jump 10 feet, that type of stuff where it's just like, I mean, let me see his number. His broad was 10 foot 9 inches. His vertical was 40 and a half. Mm-hmm. I mean, my God. So that's it. I don't know. It's going to be wild to see where this goes. He'll have his pro day. Bryce Young, they're all concerned because of the size. And then they're like, well, he's 204, but he's thin shouldered. You know, great. Draft process is crazy. Remember, you know, they always get it wrong. That's the problem.
It's by far the most important position, and they still get it wrong a lot. But I know it's hard, and that's the thing. I think looking at these four guys that are talking, that you could go 4 for 4, be really good NFL quarterbacks. You could go 0 for 4, probably going to go somewhere in between. But you are talking about the size concerns about Bryce Young. C.J. Stroud's not a real big guy either, and while he was phenomenal against Georgia, he had some other games where you could kind of rattle him, I think, and disrupt his poise to a degree. Will Levis, I'm again unsold, but what if he turns out to be a Jason Allen type with, you know, just a great athlete with a great arm who just needs to be in a better system and can learn a lot? And then Richardson,
Josh Allen.
Yeah, who knows? Josh Allen, my bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Bills guy. Thank you.
Jason Allen, little known.
Yeah.
He's the backup at Wyoming. Never quite made it. No, that's it. Well, yeah, that's the thing, Josh. I don't know. That's a decision I don't want to make because I could talk myself into any of them. But, yeah, it was quite a show. Anyway, we got plenty of time for draft talk and all of that. But it was the NFL has come to see what all of us have been waiting for in college football for years. This guy is really unique, but then watch the film and you go, well, I don't know. It seems like it's possibly there. All right, there's a ton of stories to get to here. One of them is Ross. You were down at Alabama and talked to the King, Coach Nick, Coach Saban, and he's not happy. Coach Saban is not too happy about the belief that he is going the Alabama. So SEC is going to go to 9 conference games if they go to 9 conference games, right? They have not officially decided that, but if they do, each team is expected to have 3 rivalry games that they will play every single year. And then the other 6 will feature the rest of the teams that will rotate to. So you play every team in the league every other year, but you play 3 teams every single year.
Right.
So already they're jockeying like it's, you know, it's the backstretch of Talladega to get in position to say, well, you know, everybody wants Vanderbilt as their natural rival. I think everyone's sending notes to the SEC. Boy, you know, we played that Vandy game is really a big one every year for us. You know, our fans really get excited for the Vandy game. And everyone's trying to avoid having to play Georgia, Alabama every year. Anyway, Alabama, they're expected 3 permanent rivals. You can correct me if I'm wrong here, Ross. Their games are going to be Auburn. Obviously, got to play that. LSU, it's been the biggest game for the last X number of years. And then finally, Tennessee, which is the game every October they've played for all these years. Nick Saban he's not happy with this, Ross. What's the story?
Yeah, go back to your Vanderbilt. As somebody within the league told me, everybody is bringing up their long historic rivalry with Vanderbilt lately and how it must be continued. But yeah, so, you know, just to give everybody background on kind of the situation, the SEC now for more than a year there's been a pretty good debate among the ADs and the coaches about 8 or 9 games, you know, when you get Texas and Oklahoma in the league. And so they've kind of narrowed it down to 2 finalist formats. There's a 9-game format that Dan mentioned where you play 3 permanents and 6 rotational. And there's an 8-game format where you play 1 permanent and 7 rotational. In either format, you play everybody every other year. You play everybody twice every 4 years, home and away. So it makes a lot of sense, actually. I think the formats are great. With the 8-game format, you don't get that secondary rivalry in. You know, you eliminate secondary rivalries like Auburn, Georgia, like Alabama, Tennessee, like Texas A&M. The new revival of that you'd eliminate, you wouldn't have. So in the 3-6, as everybody expected, right, it's easy to pick everybody's primary rival. It's even easy to pick everybody's secondary permanent team. It's really hard to get to a third, actually. It's difficult. I threw out a few lists over the last few months or so and have changed it here and there. And the latest one I put out there, you know, I think is pretty close, but it's hard. It's hard to pick that third one in. So Coach Saban, when I was in with him, got pretty animated about Alabama's proposed 3 permanents. And I think all the schools have basically been sent like, you know, here's your 3 or here's the 4 that we're looking at to make, you know, 3 of the 4 your 3. I think everybody's kind of been sent proposals, and Alabama was sent the LSU, Tennessee, Auburn proposal. And you would think Auburn's a definite, right, primary. Tennessee's their secondary. And then the third is difficult. And you want to have balance in the league, but man, it's really tough to not every year play the most watched game for the last decade in college football, basically on an average. So it's tough. And I think the league is doing things based on, again, primary, secondary rivalries, geographic footprint. And then the third thing is the balance of the league. And you've got, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, a top tier and a bottom tier in the SEC kind of historically. And what Coach Saban told me, right, is that the league is using a 10-year success metric. They're going back 10 years, basically in compiling, I would assume using conference standing. I didn't get specifics with him on that, but I would assume they're using conference record for the last 10 years. And so they're trying to give everybody in the top 8 of conference records 2, you know, as far as permanents, 2 permanent in the top, in 1 permanent opponent in the bottom. They're trying to get everybody in the bottom 8, 2 bottoms and 1 top. And so I think if you did the compiling, you would see that Tennessee is in the bottom and Auburn, LSU are in the top. So in a balance-wise, Alabama's is, is pretty good, right? It's pretty, it's supposed to be pretty balanced. However, Coach Saban's argument was that Tennessee should be in the top based on the last couple years and based on the trajectory and based on 30 years or 40 years of metric instead of 10. So, yeah, he was pretty vocal about that. However, I don't think the league office is going to be changing those proposed three.
Yeah, that's, you know, one issue with this is clearly, like, if you've got your top eight, bottom eight, so to speak, Tennessee's the one that kind of doesn't fit in the bottom eight historically and currently, to Saban's point. But the numbers are the numbers. They're trying to do this as dispassionately as possible to come up with this. And, you know, it's kind of sorry for your luck, Alabama. These are the teams that move the needle for your fans and for you to play and keep playing them. And I can understand feeling like you're probably going to get the toughest schedule out of anybody, but somebody has to. That's, you want a 16-team conference? You get some hard matchups. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, if you're compiling conference, if you eliminate Alabama because they have more conference, they might have twice as many conference titles as anybody else in the league, I think. I think it's 29 compared to, like, maybe the next one's like 15 or 17. So if you eliminate Alabama, Alabama has the three most difficult opponents when compiling based on SEC championships, historic SEC championships. And that's a point that's been made, obviously, by people in Tuscaloosa.
Poor old Nick. He's a completely
no sympathy,
right.
Dan? No sympathy?
None. He's right. I'm not going to say he's wrong. Tennessee is a program that can win a national championship. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's one of the, it's well equipped. Clemson stole its program. I've said that many times. Clemson just became Tennessee. This is, so Nick's looking at these, saying, no, this isn't fair, right? Tennessee's got great potential. Vanderbilt does not. Whatever. There's only so high, probably Mississippi and Mississippi Ole Miss are going to get something like that. Give me one of those. I don't know. I get it. He's not entirely wrong, but someone's got to get it a little tough. Yep. I think the Tide can handle it. B, the reason that this stat of the last 10 years, one of the main reasons that Tennessee fits into it is because Nick Saban recommended they hire Jeremy Pruitt. Cared so much about old Tennessee, maybe you would have done something different a few years ago before he torched the program, among other people that have torched the program.
Well, yes. Nick Saban personally kicked the crap out of Tennessee for like a decade straight.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's the thing too, right? The Tennessee's record is as it is because Alabama beat it
every year.
15 years in a row. Yeah. I think it was 15 or 16 years in a row up until this past year.
Yep.
This is the worst thing that happens to Alabama football this year. Then they're doing pretty well. I can't get the outrage meter out. But God bless Coach Saban trying to get every little angle. Everyone else is too, so why not?
Well, and I think people within the league are there's a lot of reaction to that story, and I think people in the league, the way they're reacting is exactly right. The way Dan reacted, poor old Alabama, you know, cry me a river kind of thing. And then the other reaction I got from maybe some more official type people were. Was more like, hey, you know, Nick Saban was the one that for years has been crying for more conference games. He wanted to play more games.
That's true.
He kept telling. In fact, there was one time maybe he said, hey, let's play 10 game conference games, you know.
Yes.
And I wrote about that, how he has been. He has been on the pulpit, and now, you know, we're seeing him maybe backtrack a little bit on that, although he still contends that it would be good to play more conference games. But he said, I think a quote in there in my story, he said that he believes the SEC should play more conference games and that it would be better for the league and better for the country and, you know, better for the schools and the fan bases. But he said the SEC would be more balanced and would be able to have more parity if they went with the 8-game, 1-7 model. The problem with, again, the big problem with the 1-7 model is that you lose secondary rivalry games in That's just really tough to swallow. And right now, I think, you know, if you did a straw poll of the SEC AD/president/coach room, because they're all working together on this. I mean, coaches are influencing athletic directors, probably. You know, athletic directors are influencing presidents. What it comes down to, the ADs will make a recommendation probably later this month to the presidents to vote on, maybe in April or something like that. Maybe it goes all the way to the spring meetings, although I don't necessarily expect that. But I think if you did a straw poll last year on this time, you might see an 8-8 split. You really might with the schools. I think the bottom half of the league would want to go, would want to stay at 8. I think the top half would want to maybe go to 9. Now, there are some schools in there that are, there's a little difference. There might be a couple top half that want 8 and a couple bottoms that might want 9. But it would be around 8-8 or 9-7 or something like that. And now it feels to me like, you know, they're leaning toward 9, that the majority is toward 9, but I don't know that it's a huge majority. So this has been a real it's been a real touchy kind of subject.
Yeah, I'm a believer in get those 3 games. Yeah, I mean there's certain schools that just, you know, what do you do? Auburn being one, right? You got to play the Iron, but you want to play Georgia every year. I mean, maybe you don't because you're going to lose, but it's the oldest rivalry in the South, right? Most games or something.
Yep.
And you want to play, I mean, Auburn, for Auburn to be good, they have to be huge in Atlanta, in the state of Georgia. You know, obviously you have the Texas conundrum. You have to play Oklahoma every year up in Dallas, but
they want to play A&M. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
they should play A&M. So what do you do with that, right? Florida, there's a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you want to do. So I hear you, Coach Saban, but oh well. Yeah. Oh well. For once, Alabama does not have all the advantages. They have to try. Yeah. And I still think you'll probably beat Tennessee. I mean, we'll see. Nick's not going to be there for, well, I won't say that, but if he's there next 10 years, I got a good feeling he'll probably win the majority of those games.
Yeah, they've lost once to Tennessee in 16 years by 3 points at the gun.
Trying to duck them
on the road. Yeah, that was enough.
Yeah, trying to duck them. All right, there was a lot of reporting. This remains kind of tumultuous out in the Pac-12 and the Big 12. And the Pac-12 may or may not get a television contract that equals the Big 12. Are the schools out there worried? Do they have to jump? There's two beliefs, obviously, that I think it's about a $31 million that the Big 12 got. Can the Pac-12 TV deal that should be coming in fairly soon reach that number as is? Or do they just literally have to is it going to be too low and they got to try something new? The most obvious are the 4, what they call the corner schools, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. Poor New Mexico is in the corner, but they're not obviously in the league. Would they jump to the Big 12, which would then enhance that contract? Washington and Oregon still want to get out. Could the ACC sit there and try to take some West Coast teams to rework their horrible television contract that runs like into the next century? All different stuff on that. What's the latest you've been hearing? And I guess my main posit is, should the Pac-12 teams really be looking elsewhere, or are they better together regardless of whether they make a little bit less money, that they can make a little bit more money elsewhere? Pat, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think this is a classic case of, you know, grass looking at the greener grass next door, but it may not be better for you to chase it. Again, now that we have a 12-team playoff in which if the Pac-12 is remotely competent, it will have a spot, I don't see the point for a marginal increase in revenue to go to what would then be a 16-team Big 12 to completely dislocate yourself from California in terms of a competition/recruiting area. Maybe not so much from recruiting, but from a competition area. And to play in that league, I just don't think it would be a good idea for those corner schools to do it. I think that it's interesting. This has been really, you know, watching this whole thing unfold as the Pac-12 continues to not announce a deal. Nature abhors a vacuum, right? Media abhors a vacuum. So the vacuum has been filled by all these stories that really sound like they're probably coming from Big 12 sources saying, oh, boy, yeah. Things are looking bad.
There's
over
agendas.
There.
Agendas, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And the more they're seeking to kind of destabilize things and make those schools say, gosh, this is, maybe we should get out of here. So I do think that there's a lot going on. Ross and I have talked about this plenty. You know, until the Pac-12 puts something on the table and says, this is what we got, we don't really know for sure. We've heard a lot. We can speculate a lot. There's a lot of information and misinformation out there. But until we know, we don't know. And the problem is, like, how long do we have to wait until we know? And the longer you wait, the more Big 12 or other people have a chance to kind of sow the seeds of instability. So I think that the Pac-12 schools need to just hold their water, take a deep breath, you know, go hit the yoga mat, get a little bit of zen, and wait and see what your deal's going to be before you make any incredibly huge decision about leaving.
Yeah, we're on, I think it's 9 months. This is the ninth month that we have gone with the speculation and just the stories on the demise of the Pac-12 and the expansion of the Big 12. It started back in July when USC and UCLA split, you know, announced their departure from the Pac-12. And it's just been this rampant speculation that kind of like died down a little bit. You felt in the fall. And then it's just like ramped back up again. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, people have agendas. And the people that we talk to, even our, you know, all three of us, our sources and stuff have their own agendas. I think it's obviously it's our responsibility and stuff to like sift through that and figure out what is real. And it's been really hard to do that with this issue. Like, it's been the most difficult to do that with this, you know, for 9 months. It's like, what is real? What is not? Am I being lied to? It's been difficult, but I can tell you that, and it's probably a reason, like, I think all three of us have stayed away from this topic in a lot of ways, because it has been tough to, we know in this situation, in these realignment stuff, that people have agendas and kind of try to push like people like us one way or the other. And that's definitely been an issue here. But having said all that, it finally feels like we're coming down to the wire and we're coming down to something that is imminent, whether that's Pac-12 staying together and all of them signing a grant of rights in committing, or the Big 12 taking teams and then basically the Pac-12 crumbling. And then the Big Ten maybe coming in and further expanding by taking others. So it feels like we're within weeks, maybe even some might say days of some kind of imminent decision here, whether that's Pac-12 stays together or Pac-12 goes under. But you know, the four corner, it's pretty obvious now for 8 or 9 months that Big 12 officials, you know, led by Commissioner Brett Yormark, who is known to be self-proclaimed deal maker and very aggressive, cutthroat kind of guy, disruptor. It's pretty obvious he's in pursuit of those schools, and his ADs seem behind him to expand and take those schools. So it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, this week is a big week. It's the Pac-12 basketball tournament in Vegas, right? Is it in Vegas?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I
would
really
expect, claiming Vegas. They moved their football.
Yeah, they are.
They're trying to
the
be
flag
Vegas.
In it. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's a big week because the presidents meet. Yeah. I think the presidents meet have a call this week. I'm guessing that ADs will meet at the men's basketball tournament. That's usually what happens. So could be got more conversation this week on this topic.
See if it's at the Spearmint Rhino or an official capacity in a boardroom somewhere, or that super swanky. Remember, Larry Scott used to get the super swanky, like Rain Man suite at the. $50,000 a night or some stuff. All right, so I'm going to say this: I think these schools would be crazy to leave right now.
Yeah,
crazy. Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, Utah. Unless the money is like 15, 20 million under, which it's not going to be, you're crazy. TV money is TV money. And I I've said this so many times. Somehow college athletics officials have sold their fans on rooting for how much revenue they make. Yeah. Not how many games we actually can win, how mm-hmm. successful we can be. I, as a fan of a team, I've never thought, boy, I hope my owner's getting richer. I hope we're paying all of the people who run the team more money. I hope that the carpet in the locker room gets replaced every 6 months so there's no wear or tear. I want to win, right? Yeah. There's more than one way to make money, too. And one thing with not Utah. Utah is roaring at full boat. Colorado, Arizona, and Arizona State suffer from apathy of fans, donors, boosters, community involvement, advertising at the games, the whole thing, right?
Yep.
Like those three programs have been dormant. And the way to get that money coming, which you control all of, is to win, to compete for championships, to be an exciting situation. You take Colorado, they got Deion Sanders. Coach Prime is there. They are expecting like 35,000 now for their spring game.
Which at Colorado is preposterous.
They literally had like 2,000 last year.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's if they get 30, it'll be, sorry, Dan, I was, if they get 30,000, it'll be the most combined. It'll combine the last 15 years of their spring game attendance, right. I believe. I'm sorry, it took me a while to spit that one out.
In 2008, they had 17,800 attend. So they, if they can get up to 35 or so, we'll see. But they're expecting to have over 30 already. And it's April. It's April 22nd. So we've still got a ways to go. They double the all-time record, okay? They're going to make money. Putting Deion Sanders in a 16 team, it's just hard to beat 15 teams out.
Yeah.
It's just too many teams, and those teams are all over the place. Like, all right, we got a great, we're rolling, but it's like, well, so doesn't UCF or what? So somebody else has got a good team. There's too many teams. You have to win a 16 team league is brutally hard. And if it's easier just getting that muddled middle where you're just like, you want to go to the Colorado game? You want to go to the Arizona State game? What are they like 5-4 right now? Right? Yeah. It's all right. You want to win. You got a 10-team league that any of these teams can win. Yeah, Oregon's better. Washington certainly can be better. But you've got a chance to be really good in this league, and you could be sitting there in a November game saying, hey, we're 8-1, and we're playing 8-1. Ducks are coming in, and all of a sudden you saw like that creates some energy. If all you're chasing is TV bottom line, not the experience of a possibly competing for championships, competing for playoff spots, having big games, then what is you're never activating those fans. You're Boston College. That's what you are. Mm-hmm. Boston College athletics sucks.
Yep.
They used to be really exciting. Then they got a bunch of ACC money, and everybody at Boston College makes more money, and the athletic department has been horrible for X number of years because they can't really compete.
Yeah, it's like, no, they're the worst athletic program in the ACC. Congratulations.
Right. And then how do you win up there? But hey, we got that ACC money. We didn't get stuck in the Big East, which blew up. But if they had just stuck together in the Big East, they'd have a really exciting little football conference and basketball conference in the Northeast, right? But it's not just like everything fell apart. Syracuse, same thing, right? Different programs. It's like, hey, we got this money. Like, who cares? If you're a fan of Boston College and haven't, you know, good for you. Still a fan, but it's like, this sucks. Remember when we were good? Remember, at least we were playing. Yeah, maybe it was we were playing Rutgers, but we were 8-2. You know, now it's like we're Clemson shows up and beats us 31-3 every couple of years. But look at that revenue. So don't do it. At least give it the 5-year shot and see. You're not going anywhere. You're Arizona State. Like, you're still sitting in Phoenix, the huge TV market. Like, someone's going to want you at some point.
Yeah.
Well, this is,
I agree with all of it.
There are two buckets here, I think, that Pac-12, you know, folks look at. And obviously, it's not just the money and getting close to that $31 million in deciding if they were to leave, you know, for the Big 12 or not. I think there's a visibility part of this. You know, if reports are true that 70-80% of the TV deal is going to be streaming only, I think that's concerning to people, especially in the Pac-12 states and cities that aren't in a big metro. And the, you know, one that I can think of obviously is Tucson, Arizona, and those are one of the four schools that are I think have, you know, in communication with the Big 12, and I think that those schools like that are concerned over the visibility of the conference when you have a majority streaming deal. So I think it's not just money. I think it's the visibility, the money. I think a lot of people expect the money to be pretty close. I mean, yeah, certainly within $5 to $7 million a year. And at that point, you know, is it really worth, you know, taking the leap? But it is the visibility. You know, Big 12 has Fox and ESPN on board with their new TV package, and any new member that is a Power 5 member, if the Big 12 were to expand, gets I believe a pro rata share and of the cut. So the TV deal does not, there's no dilution of anybody else's shares.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly don't want to discount the impact that streaming could have on that sort of thing. But, you know, in terms of Pac-12 schools that aren't in major markets, that's exactly two of them. That's Tucson, which really is not tiny, but that's Tucson and that's Pullman. The Oregon schools are close enough to Portland. You know, they're both within, I think, an hour and a half of Portland. And everything else is Bay Area, Salt Lake City, Denver. Boulder is Denver, more or less. You know, so I don't know. You can throw up a lot of reasons for concern. Most of them are legitimate, but I still think in the big picture, be much better off not bailing out of your situation if you are the Pac-12 now that you have a 12-team playoff.
Yeah, I agree. Tucson's big and growing, so yeah, I think there's at least a million down there. But yeah, do not do it. Do not do it, Pac-12. This is free consulting by the friendly voices here at the College Football Inquirer. All right, a couple other things. We wanted to get to basketball. Pat, you had an interesting point you brought up. It's, you know, player of the year, coach of the year time. Well, I'll let you lay it out here. What do you got?
Okay. Yeah, this is the week. All right, everybody's starting their conference tournaments, and so this is the week that school or the conferences announce who is the player of the year, who's the coach of the year, freshman of the year, all league teams, all that stuff. In the SEC, in a vacuum, in a performance-only vacuum, the choices are pretty clear, certainly for player of the year freshman. The year it's Brandon Miller, right? Alabama. Coach of the year, Nate Oates would probably be the guy in a vacuum. However, we have not lived in a vacuum for the last couple of weeks with what's happened at Alabama and the, you know, revelations that Brandon Miller did drive a murder weapon to the scene of a murder at the request of his teammate. Whether it's a coincidence that the weapon arrived there with Brandon Miller or whatever, the weapon was, you came out of his car and was used to kill somebody.
Coincidence.
So, and then there's that, and then there's the reaction to that. And Nate Oates is incredibly tone-deaf at best responses to that. There was the pat-down. There's the fact that neither he nor the other players involved, Jaden Bradley, that was there, have missed a single second of playing time because of this. And so should that affect something like whether he wins the player of the year? I've heard from a couple people like, man, what are we supposed to do about this? People who vote on that. I don't. But there's two different awards, okay? There's coaches awards and there's AP/media awards. Those are coming out maybe today, Monday or Tuesday. And we're going to find out, I think, a little bit of whether there's any sort of protest vote to Brandon Miller and or Nate Oates.
Morality clause.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fascinating part of this. Right, yeah. It's like the Heisman. We always we talk, you know, every year the Heisman comes up, and this is a discussion, is the morality, kind of ethical, whatever you want to call it, part of the Heisman voting. And this is it's something that I think many of us kind of gloss over. But Pat, and I think Pat had somebody reach out to him last week. They reached out to me, and I just because I don't cover basketball a lot, I sent them to Pat, but they were asking, I think they were writing a story about this maybe, and were asking about what I would vote for Brandon Miller and Nate Oates for these awards. And like I said, I told him I don't cover basketball much, but I had never thought of that until that person reached out to me. But it's kind of fascinating dynamic to this.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Brandon Miller should be the player of the year in the ACC. Maybe you extend the coach's job to like life lessons and things like that, or trying to, you know, build better a person, and you could ding Nate Oates for that.
Yep.
You know, the Memphis Grizzlies suspended Ja Morant. He's out right now because he had a social media poster. He's holding a gun and needs some time. He said he's going to spend some time thinking about why he's handling stress the way, this whole thing. You know, there was a time when college basketball tried to mold people into, now it's like, man, we only got this guy for like six more games. Better play him. You know, right? We talked last week, you know, Jalen Carter. Hey, got a going 89 and a 45. No penalty.
No.
2 months later, going 100 and a 45. Someone, you know, someone else dies. You know, another guy gets, you know, there's no suspensions. We've given up. They've given up on it. Some people are doing it, but not many. The big schools aren't. You know where the trend is going. Play them. It's up to the NFL and the NBA now to try to help. But quite honestly, Ja Morant's more valuable to Memphis. They need him for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
College teams are like, this guy's value to me in college. Forget being a good person. I've given up believing that. Like, there's people out there that care about trying to make them good people. It's just straight value proposition. It's like, I need this guy for 3 months. But Memphis is sitting there saying, I need him for 10 years. Let's try to smooth this out. I can't lose the franchise. So maybe you ding Nate Oates for that, but I don't know how you don't make Brandon Miller the player of the year.
That's the thing. First of all, I mean, like, there's no competition, right? Oscar Tshiebwe would, I guess, be the closest thing to it. And he hasn't been as good this year as he was last year for Kentucky, and their team hasn't been as good.
Yeah.
So, you know, the danger in all of this is most of us in the media or whatever, we have some information on these guys. We don't have all the information. So you may say, well, Brandon Miller doesn't meet the lofty character standards I would like to see for the SEC Player of the Year. So I'm going to give it to that guy. And then you may find out later, oh, that guy did what?
Yeah,
oh,
right.
Oh, this is college basketball. It's not like, you know, we have a bunch of Eagle Scouts necessarily walking around here. So if you're deciding one guy's, you know, pure, be careful on that decision. Now, with Nate Oates and the coach of the year, there's some other candidates there. You know, Dennis Gates at Missouri. They were, I think, picked 11th preseason. They ended up 4th. Jerry Stackhouse at Vanderbilt, picked 12th, ended up 6th. Buzz Williams at Texas A&M, they ended up runner-up in the league. So you could find some reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. But
tough not to give it to Brandon Miller.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, here's one that is I'm almost terrified to even get involved in. You want to think it's easy to dole out discipline as an athletic director. Texas Tech coach Mark Adams has been suspended. Now, I'm reading a Jeff Goodman story from watchstadium.com. So there is an investigation into an inappropriate, unacceptable, and racially insensitive comment made to a player last week. Adams told Stadium the comments he made were not racist and that he was quoting a Bible verse when he told one of his players that there is, quote, always a master and always a servant, end quote. I was quoting the scripture, Adams told Stadium. It was a private conversation about coaching when you have a job and being coachable. I said that in the Bible that Jesus talks about how we all have bosses and we are all servants. And I was quoting the Bible about that. One of my players said it bothered the player. Adams said, I explained to them. I didn't apologize. Okay, so we have on one side a inappropriate, unacceptable, and racially insensitive comment. On the other side, we have a guy saying he's quoting scripture. How'd you like to get in the middle of that decision?
Can't imagine why you were scared to really touch this this issue, Dan.
I mean, they're gonna. You should not say. I'm gonna say it. Fine. You want to believe every word that comes out of the Bible is good? Don't use that one. This is ridiculous. Don't. Okay. I'm on the inappropriate. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. But the defense is, I was quoting scripture. You're going to get some support on that.
Oh, sure. That's all you got to say.
holy cow, now we're into something. I mean, but I mean, talking about masters and servants, that's not, I mean, that, no. that, come, you got to be smarter than that. There's all sorts of stuff in the Bible that you don't just repeat. I mean, you don't talk about like,
yeah, a lot of
trading your daughters off for, I mean, go read Leviticus. I mean, my goodness. I mean, this is not polite company stuff there. I mean, it is a violent, I mean, there's a lot in the Bible. Like, you just are like, okay. Right. I mean, this is not, that is a terrible defense, but the defense will work with some people. I don't know. Holy.
If you go Old Testament, you are running the risk, quoting anything from the Old Testament of saying something really outrageous and outlandish.
Kirby Oaken's just like, come on, man. Come on.
But that, here, I think this would qualify as know your audience. You're a 66-year-old white coach. I'm not sure you go into the locker room talking about masters and slave and servants or whatever
you
the
do
case
not.
Is with your...
You do yeah, not.
I'm pretty sure you don't. You know, if you want to go home and talk to your wife about that, you do that. But for the love of God, if you want to just nuke your career, that's a great way to do it.
That is not the way you try to tell a guy he needs to be more coachable. Right. Like, dude, also, you got to box out more. You know, and I'm going to use a, I mean, what are we talking about here? It's basketball. Your team stinks. Like, really? This is an intelligence test, and he failed it. I don't care if it's in the Bible or not. I mean, but.
Well, here's the, what does the it question say? Now. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, what does it say also about the relationship between the coach and the player that I assume, you know, after this conversation, the player went and told people that this happened. So that
not surprised. Probably, you know, walked out of there going, I cannot believe what I just heard.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I cannot believe what I just heard. I don't know.
Yeah. We just got lectured about being good servants to the master.
I'm guessing Mark Adams' time at Texas Tech is limited. We'll see. He'll be back.
Yeah.
Next year,
well, that's the
maybe, but
we'll see.
The real problem is they're losing.
Yeah, that's he's just given more ammo to people that are mad that he hasn't maintained what Chris Beard had built. By the way, Chris Beard is available.
Chris Beard is available. Mm-hmm. Where will Chris Beard go?
Will he go back to Texas? Will he go back? It was an acrimonious parting. They were really mad at him for leaving, but they would also probably take him back in about 5 years.
Oh yeah. We forget all that.
Yeah, that's the thing too. A part of this, if they're 16 and 15, I think, or 16 and 16, something like that. What if they were sitting at 24 and 8? I wonder how if this decision would be any different. Just saying.
Coach Adams' piety would be much more important then.
All right, staying in Texas, Ross, you had a story on Texas A&M staying on the forefront of NIL discussions. What do we got? What happened?
Yeah, so, you know, a couple weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago now, Texas A&M announced a new NIL initiative. Actually, Texas A&M did announce it. Texas A&M's foundation announced it. The fundraising arm for the university announced that they would be starting a new NIL initiative. Basically, the foundation of Texas A&M is created this NIL portion of their foundation where boosters can donate to the NIL initiative, and the foundation operates it, and it distributes donations to athletes through NIL deals. Basically, the Texas A&M's fundraising arm has a collective, an NIL collective. So it's running NIL through the foundation. This is a hot topic in the NIL space. It got hotter last week when the NCAA distributed a memo that we got a hold of to all schools, basically targeting Texas A&M, you know, saying, just reminding everybody that, you know, schools can't facilitate deals. Entities representing schools can't facilitate deals. And, oh, by the way, you can't give priority points and seating and such like that for NIL to NIL donations, and in Texas A&M's announcement or their foundation's announcement had said that they'll be giving priority points. So this has set off quite a crap storm in the NIL space, and everybody in the SEC, a bunch of schools in the SEC, are all now exploring this, running their NIL through the foundation. Thing is, it's not brand new. Arkansas has been doing something fairly similar for several months now. And, all other SEC schools are starting to explore this. And so if the NCAA doesn't come down and kind of enforce this or say openly that this is illegal, you're going to see this popping up at a lot of places. And it gives schools the oversight and control on NIL, on collectives.
Yeah, this will definitely be one to watch. And the NCAA did put out a statement, which is not terribly common, saying that Texas A&M apprised us of this, but did not seek approval or get approval for this arrangement. And I think it's safe to say, like Coach Saban, the NCAA has been watching what's been going on with Texas A&M's collectives and NIL and recruiting. And so that could be one to watch as the NCAA attempts to get its enforcement arms around the entire enterprise.
I was told that they did not involve themselves in this in the recruiting process. So.
Thank you, Coach Fisher.
Not sure what they're even bothering with.
Yeah, A&M, by the way, notified the SEC and the NCAA both, and both did no such thing as approve or stamp it. And so not just the NCAA, but I think the league in general has their concerns over this as well.
Well, we're going to see if anyone does anything about it.
Yep.
So yeah.
Eventually, this has got to come to a head. Like they did the Miami thing, but they danced around it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just the women's basketball coach got suspended. But at some point, they're going to have to make a ruling on this. I don't know if that ruling will ever stand. I mean, it's a game of chicken right now. And go ahead, and we'll see. But I have faith in the Aggies are on up and up. would never do anything wrong. All right, creepiest story of the week. I'm a little terrified that some listeners saw this story and immediately sent it to me. I don't know why. It comes from Peru. A man named Juan Cesar Baramahu. I don't know. Whatever. We'll just call him Juan Cesar. Sure.
Yeah.
Juan Cesar is a food delivery guy. And so he has one of those bags, those like keep it warm, fancy food delivery bags. And he was at a park. He was on duty. He's had multiple issues here. He was on duty, but he was stopped for drinking in a park in Peru. He's hanging out, having a couple drinks in a park. And it turns out he was showing a couple friends what was inside his a food delivery bag, and it was a 600 to 800 year old mummy.
Oh, God.
Mummy. Yeah. Was in his cooler bag. Warm.
Or cold, either way. I mean,
they've got a picture. He's up on this hill. It's a nice quality work by the pictures, quality view of this park. And he has the mummy in the food delivery bag. So, the cops obviously came. Juan Cesar.
Oh my
said,
God! I see the pictures. Oh my God!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a mummy in there.
Oh my
God! I take care of her, and she takes care of me.
Come on!
Terrifying. He has named the mummy Juanita. This is creepy beyond creepy, including like Weekend at Bernie's, like to the centuries.
She is like my spiritual girlfriend.
Spiritual friend. The joke is that the authorities have examined the mummy and the mummy appears to be male. So that might.
Okay.
That's yeah. Okay. But I don't know that it matters. You're spending that much time with a mummified thing. So I don't know. But the Juan Cesar has been charged, and there's an actual law against this, and he could face 5 years in jail. I like that someone wrote a law to I would not have thought that this would have been a thing, but it's called possession of historical patrimony. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sure when they wrote the law, they probably didn't think that it would be used on someone toting around a 600-year-old mummy in a warming cooling bag. But here we are.
Yeah.
Well, I wish my Peruvian export were home. She's stepped out for the morning here. My daughter sometimes lives in Peru with the Peace Corps, but they've actually been relocated because of government unrest. She's going back in April. But one of the things she did say about their culture down there is they are very almost like they're humored almost by death. Like they make a lot of jokes about it. Seriously, they hang out and party in the cemetery. So I would like to get her interpretation of this. I see this is in Puno, which I don't think is near where she has been living. But
Puno, Peru. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll get a little interpretation on that.
More importantly, why did people send this to me? I have nothing to do with this type of... Yeah.
Get a weird story, send it to Dan Wetzel.
I get when it's like, you know, Florida man drinks too many Bush Lights, steals lawnmower. I totally get it, right? I'm getting
yet
those.
We're talking about it. Look, they sent it to you worked. And you couldn't help yourself. Yeah.
See? All right, one final one before we go. National Park Service, our friends at National Park Service. We've certainly had a number of these stories. Animal attacks. They got a little cheeky last week in a tweet. They said, because it's bear season coming up, and it said, if you come across a bear, never push a slower friend down, even if you feel the friendship has run its course. What's going with this up with the park service?
I thought it was pretty funny.
Your ass. Remember the guy on a date? He was on a date and the bison attacked the date and he ran and the woman got gored. Worst date ever.
God.
Like, he did not protect her at all. He just ran and let her get run over by the bison. It was like the park service. So don't do that. I guess they're saying nice things here, but still, like, why put that in someone's head? Well, park service.
Yeah, you're probably just giving people ideas.
Yeah.
I think the other flip side of that is if you're going to go into areas that have bears around, always go with someone slower than you.
Yeah.
So that you can escape.
Or a rifle. But you got to have, I don't know. Just doesn't seem like the park service. I'm a little disturbed. They're stir crazy. They're up there. They must be like, this tweet must be emanating from like a snowed in like cabin on the Grand Tetons or something.
Speaking of bears, by the way, if you haven't yet, take it from me. Go see Cocaine Bear. You will laugh.
I got to see. You saw it?
You will laugh your ass off. It is hysterical. I will watch it again now.
We hyped it earlier. I've been meaning to get, wanted to get to it this weekend and could not. Cocaine Bear is coming. I'm just happy it's not a Marvel movie. That's all I want. I hate comic books. I haven't seen a movie in years. They don't make movies that aren't comic books.
Yeah, it's true. But it's loosely based on a true story.
Very loosely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe the story is like somebody was flying a plane with a bunch of cocaine in it and they thought they're going to get caught. So they threw the cocaine out of the plane like they were smuggling it, and that landed in the woods. And eventually no one knew that. But then they found somebody found the bear surrounded by open packages of coke and the bear was dead. Right. Is that right? I believe that's the story. Right. So this movie says what happened in between the landing of that.
Yeah.
The bear finding the coke and ODing on the coke.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tremendous work by whoever came up with that concept.
Can you imagine like the pitch meeting for that? Here's what we got. We got a bear overdosing on cocaine. What do you think?
Green light. It's better than the origin story of this fringe character from some comic book. No. Give me Cocaine Bear. Give me Cocaine Bear 2. Give me Marijuana Bear. Give me Opioid Bear. I don't care. Let's turn this into a franchise.
I was listening to another podcast, and they said, the sequel will be Meth Crocodile will be the sequel to Cocaine Bear. Meth Crocodile. Well,
and you know what? Or Alligator, at least. That sounds a very Florida man possible.
Yeah,
that
was there you go.
Coming live from Ocala. fentanyl gator. All right, that's our show. We're down. This isn't going well. Please continue to listen and share us on social media, subscribe, and we'll be back later this week. March Madness getting cranked up, all sorts of stuff going on. We will talk to you later.